The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The great American pastime, eating our face. Eating. And oh boy, how we love to eat. And eat. And eat. Most of us think of eating as one of the few pleasures of life that isn't immoral or illegal. And so, as the richest nation in the world, we indulge, and indulge, and indulge. At the same time, nearly half of all Americans suffer from at least one chronic disease or disability. Millions suffer from a whole host of modern diseases, cancer, ulcers, heart disease. Sometimes we wonder, could we in this modern, affluent age be overfed and undernourished? What is health, good health? Is it the guy with bulging muscles, rippling, that just stepped out of the Charles Atlas Salon, if there is such a thing, or the Jack LaLanne Salon, or in Southern California, or wherever else you might be, where there is an absolute plethora of reducing salons and karate parlors and things of this nature where people are trying to beat and pummel and otherwise get their bodies in good shape? Is health the guy who can do 5,000 sit-ups without stopping? Is it the fellow who can ride about 40 miles on a bicycle or jog for 10 miles daily? Is it the businessman who hasn't missed a day of work for about the past 4 years? Or the fellow who's been every day on the job with time off for vacation for 20 years and retired now with a gold railroad type watch and never missed a day because of disability? Is that what health is? The World Health Organization defines health as a state of complete mental and social well-being, not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. But the Medical Association, American Medical Association, in a recent report, said the healthiest person in the United States, the average person, is a 17-year-old white farm boy living in the Midwest of the United States with his parents who have an average income of about $15,000 a year. By contrast, the same report said the unhealthiest person in the United States is probably an elderly black lady living alone in a large western city. But what will make one person healthy and another one unhealthy when they seemingly live side by side, perhaps are even members of the same family and maybe even live with the same kind of a diet? One person can appear to be robust and full of, as we say, thin vigor and vitality, and the other person can be run down, sickly and enervated, and this is not a Gerosol ad, in spite of what you may think. Are there principles or laws that regulate physical well-being and good health? Or is it just a matter of being lucky, or heredity, and environmental factors, and so on? Or is it a matter of gulping down pills or having lots of dietary supplements every single day? I'll tell you one thing for sure. The idea about diet, exercise, health, and well-being has given rise to an absolute cult of people who are hangers-on at health food stores, and I think there are more stories and there are more attitudes and more antagonisms about the thing of health, and even cultic-type organizations very definitely religiously oriented, springing up around various health ideas and practically anything else you can point to. It's the stuff of old wives' tales of home medicines and family cures, because it's the way we feel. And when you talk about something so close to us as us, I mean inside of us, not just what we wear, it can sometimes become even a very emotional subject to many people. The book Healthier Living states, and I quote, "Health is the fullness of life, the balanced output, the total harmony, in as close accord as possible with the environment. Health is a product of harmony, more or less perfect between man and his environment. But are we as a people in harmony with the laws that govern health? The national health profile of the American tells a tragic story. One half of the nation rendered asunder, according to estimates by the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Over 96 million Americans, or about 5 out of 10, one half, has one or more chronic diseases or impairments. Every other person you meet, and 7 out of 10 persons over 45 years of age, suffer with at least one chronic disease or disability. 7 out of 10, that's an awful lot of Americans. Over 2 million Americans see a doctor every single day. And that, by the way, if we lined them up, would be a line of humanity stretching from San Diego to San Francisco every single day. About 30 million Americans are spending time in a hospital every year, 1,500,000 on any one day. And this, by the way, is equal to the entire population of a city the size of Detroit. That's a whopping number of people spending time in hospitals every single year, 30 million. Approximately 15 million surgical operations are performed annually in the United States, and that's an awful lot of people being cut upon. Not a very good picture when you look at the National Health in statistics. We talked to Dr. Michael Rabin, who is a clinical nutritionist, and asked him to describe the state of American health.
Dr. Rabin, how would you describe the state of America's health?
We are the sickest nation in the world. We lead the world in degenerative diseases.
You mean that we have more degenerative diseases than, say, India, where people are starving to death?
Yes, but for a different reason. There, it is a matter of poverty. Here, we suffer from the malnutrition of affluence.
How do our health problems differ from those in underdeveloped countries?
The more primitive the peoples are, and the conditions under which they live, the better their health.
You say that we're the sickest nation in the world. Do you find it difficult to convince the average person that we have more degenerative disease than the Aborigines, or people in Africa, or people in India?
I would say that the average person is resistant to this knowledge because it has become a matter of habit with him. It's a way of life. The patient that we get that is willing to do as we tell him must be two things. He must be intelligent and desperate. When he is desperate enough, he is ready to listen.
When he is desperate enough. That's the trouble with us, perhaps. We never really become interested or excited about, and maybe glandularly and emotionally involved about, our own personal health problems until it's virtually too late. Hindsight is 20/20. When we get desperate enough, we want to do something about our health, but usually after we get the disease or the infirmity. We hear the statistics, but somehow it applies, like in the Army, the other guy is going to get it. It doesn't mean me. But 60% of all United States deaths are from cardiovascular diseases. That's related directly to the heart and the circulatory system, and that is well over 1 million deaths yearly from heart attacks and circulatory problems. This towers over the next two leading causes of death: cancer, 19%, and accidents, 7%. We asked Dr. Quayle just what a heart attack involves.
A heart attack, in layman's language, is the stoppage of the blood supply to the heart muscle itself. Now, there's a nutrient blood supply to the heart muscle that maybe you can use an analogy of a sprinkler to a lawn. And if something happens to your sprinkler system, why, part of your lawn turns brown and eventually dies. And this is what happens in a heart attack, that the sprinkler supply or the coronary artery supply to the heart muscle is blocked, and that area of heart muscle physically dies and is replaced by scar tissue.
What incidents of heart disease or heart attacks are there in this country in the under 40 age group?
I can't give you an exact number on that, but about one out of every five men under the age of 55 is going to have some type of a myocardial infarction, heart attack. And I think, of course, we could scale that down to under 40. Maybe we could say maybe one out of 10 or one out of 6, somewhere in that range, is going to be afflicted with a heart attack before the age of 40. Unfortunately, this trend is getting to an earlier and earlier stage of our lives, and in fact, we are finding evidence of severe coronary artery disease, which is the predecessor of a heart attack, in very young men.
We are what we eat. That's an ancient old adage, but let me tell you, it's becoming very obvious as you look at these grisly statistics and listen to the experts that we in this United States of America and Canada are not following the laws that produce good health. There has got to be a reason why so many of us are chronically ill.
Thousands starve daily because the 10% of Earth's surface which is productive is not enough to meet growing food demands. Yet if man could level most of the vast mountain ranges, raise up some of the deep arid desert valleys, renew the depleted jungle soils, and provide good, gentle rain in due season, that he would have additional millions of acres of farmland. Man would have a solution to feeding the Earth's teeming population. Will such an answer be found? How will tomorrow's world be made free of starvation with the hunger bomb diffused? This free booklet titled A Wonderful World Tomorrow shows you the brilliant future ahead for man in a world where today's problems will be solved. It offers hope for the future and has a sure basis for that optimism. Be sure to write today for this free booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
Any high school boy or girl who has been taking a combination of a health class along with gym class and begins to learn basic dietary and nutritional laws understands that the real background or the building block of good health is diet, plain and simple. It's what we eat, because that's, after all, what we are. We eat things that come out of the ground, and the idea is we want to preserve them, don't let them spoil, instead of eating them before they do spoil. And so it's a vast subject. Don't want to get ahead of myself right now on this program. The first key to good health, though, is diet. Said Jean-Briat Savarin, I believe it's pronounced maybe differently from that, pardon my French, clear back in 1826, in The Physiology of Taste, and I quote, "The destiny of nations depends on the manner in which they nourish themselves. The United States, on the one hand, is the most affluent country in the world, and yet we are one of the sickest. We could eat balanced, healthful diets, and in spite of the food bill crisis, we still could be healthy, but apparently most of us don't think it is worth the effort to properly eat in order to ensure for ourselves good health."
You think the average American diet is a balanced one, or is it a gastronomical catastrophe?
Oh, it's probably the disaster of the century. You know, looking at breakfast, what we eat for breakfast is the biggest travesty. Fried eggs, fried potatoes, toast, coffee. There's a lot of starch there and very little real food value. I think breakfast is probably the biggest crime in the American diet.
I really don't know. I'd say it's a lot more fun eating stuff that's maybe not too good for you.
Well, it's bad because things that are reasonable to buy are high in starches, like your hamburger helpers or something like that. You know, you mix something in, but it's all got these starches, so you're not getting any nutrition from it.
I think it's a gastronomical catastrophe, really. They're not... It's more like anything that they can get, they'll eat.
Do you feel that you eat a pretty balanced diet?
Oh, I think most of us are a little off in this area. I think we have too many sweets, too many rich foods, and not enough the good basics. This is a common ailment with Americans, I think. No, I don't. I don't diet at all like I should. I drink far too much milk. Now, milk is a healthy food, I know, but I drink a lot of whole milk, and that's where this comes from. That's not beer. No, this is whole milk.
I try to eat a fairly balanced diet. The biggest problem that I have is with business luncheons and
a few martinis.
Right. You know, and they're generally very heavy, and, you know, you get a lot of food, and unless you have a lot of willpower, it's very easy to overdo it.
You're a European, and you came to this country a number of years ago. How do you feel about America's physical fitness?
Well, the American people are eating too much. First of all, they don't walk enough. Second, too much meat, too much of everything, too much relaxing, and too many candies. Here I catch a cold and I eat like a pig, because I've learned the American way. Now there is no reason to eat so much, because only you give money to try to reduce. Here I am 150 pounds, try to lose. I show you the cargo, I read the book, I try all kinds of diets, because I follow my husband's family. They eat 5-10 times a day, every time, every minute in the refrigerator. So there is no reason to eat so much.
Many people are coming to realize that the American diet is not getting better, but worse. In fact, a study which appeared in the Journal of Nutrition Education clearly showed that the American diet is actually worse today than it was 20 years ago. And a report by the White House Conference on Nutrition points out that between 1955 to 1965, the percentage of American households with a diet classified as good dropped from 60% to 50%, and the report said that trend is continuing today. We asked Dr. John Mayer, who co-authored the report, if there has been a change in the eating habits of Americans.
Has there been a notable shift in eating habits in the United States and Canada in the past 20 to 25 years?
Well, there has been a very notable shift. First of all, in food habits, we now have one-third of the meals in the United States taken outside of the home, which is quite new. And secondly, perhaps as much as half of the foods consumed in the home are no longer the primary foods like meat, milk, eggs, bread if you want, vegetables, fruit, which are bought at the supermarket. A great many of them are prepared
snack foods?
Well, not only snack foods, but TV dinners, pre-packaged mixes of various kinds, ready-made pies, and so on and so forth. So this is a great deal of difference in frozen souffles, a great deal of difference in the way in which the foods are bought and prepared. In terms of composition, since 1900, there has been a shift in entirely that higher in fat and higher in saturated fat, perhaps also an increase in consumption of sugar.
Many nutritionists have decried the diet of the average American teenager, especially teenage girls. What problems result from this diet of candy, snacks, soft drinks, hamburgers, teenage diet?
Well, in general, it tends to be low in fruits and vegetables. In girls, it's very often a diet which is low in iron and leads to iron deficiency anemia. It's often low in vitamin A, it's often low in vitamin C.
And the causal factors then in some of these problems with childbirth and problems, female problems and the like in girls, as well as related problems such as the coronary heart attack situation you heard earlier, a very young man, even before they reach age 40, has got to have something to do with the terrible dietary habits of Americans. The fact is that modern man, especially in our Western civilized countries, has radically altered his diet and is now suffering the consequences. A whole new pattern of disease has emerged in the United States, Canada, Britain, and Western Europe. The old infectious epidemic diseases are now said to be largely under control. These diseases we used to hear about, like bubonic plague and scarlet fever and the like, smallpox, these that we still go to get vaccinated for before we go overseas. Those, however, are largely disappearing from the scene, but doctors now refer to the 20 years abuse, meaning we can abuse natural good health for 20 years or so before the effects catch up with us. Said Robert Walker, writing on the diseases of civilization, and I quote, "The new kind of dietary deficiency disease caused by concentrated incomplete foods builds up slowly over half a lifetime and then manifests itself in a wide variety of degenerative diseases, both acute and chronic. So we don't seem to realize that we are what we eat, and even 20 years later it can catch up with us. You can get away with eating junk food, teenage diet, TV dinners, and the like for a while, but inevitably, it is going to catch up with you."
For 40 years, the Plain Truth magazine has been supplying the missing dimension in education. The Plain Truth is published monthly as a facet of Ambassador College's In the Home Educational Service. It maintains an editorial policy that incorporates this missing dimension in education: biblical understanding. The Plain Truth's timely, informative articles deal with subjects covering success in business, recreation, politics, religion, farming. Each issue not only documents the state of today's society, but offers hope for a better world tomorrow. To serve its more than 6 million readers, The Plain Truth is published in 5 languages and is available without price or obligation to all who request it. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your subscription to the magazine with a 40-year history of educational service to mankind. The Plain Truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
I think Americans commonly feel a little bit sorry for so-called primitive peoples who seem to have a terrible diet. And yet, when you look at some of those peoples, at their lifespan, at the absence of some of the degenerative diseases we have, It almost should be the other way around, because in many respects, some of those so-called primitive peoples are more healthy than we are. A. Elliott Smith, formerly senior surgeon at Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford, studied the unsophisticated native peoples of Africa and noted the absence of modern diseases such as appendicitis, ulcers, diabetes, obesity, coronary thrombosis, dental decay, constipation, but he also noted that these degenerative diseases increased dramatically as Western civilized-type diets were introduced among these peoples. We might go back to the day when in our American West, some of the Indian peoples, as they were falsely called, came in contact with some of the early settlers, caught various white man's diseases, and were all virtually exterminated. Other authorities, such as Weston A. Price and D.P. Burkitt, found identical conclusions that people began to consume increasing amounts of over-refined, processed, preserved, and packaged products, their health inevitably suffered. We asked Dr. George Briggs to evaluate the American diet.
How would you candidly evaluate or describe the average American diet?
Well, the average American diet is, in my estimation, just borderline. When you look at what people are eating nationally, over half of what we're eating is either calories from fat or carbohydrate like sugar, or starchy foods, and including white flour.
Foodless foods, foods that are highly refined and processed, convenience foods, are they good for us?
Not as good as those that aren't as processed. Every time you process a food, every time you take a bean and blanch it and then can it and heat it, or even treat it in any way, just let it sit around, some of the nutritive value is destroyed. There are exceptions to this. The vitamin C in frozen orange juice stays up very well, for instance. But every time we cook any food, the B vitamins particularly are unstable. Or if we cook food and throw away the water, instead of using it in soup or in other ways in our cooking, then we are throwing away nutrients. But we do lose food by poor processing.
Is diet in any way associated with degenerative diseases?
Absolutely. A good article in the Scientific American this last April shows that the health care costs in this country are about $70 to $75 billion a year. Billion dollars. This is about $350 per capita in the United States, and in other countries it's relatively the same. This amount of money could be saved if we would eat better, in part. Now, the degenerative diseases are very marked. In fact, this article points out that 83 out of every 100 male babies born today will die of a degenerative chronic disease. In other words, four-fifths of the people born today are going to die of some form of either a heart disease or diabetes or maybe cancer. I have been quoted widely as saying that I wouldn't feed the American diet to my dog. And I stick by this statement. It's absolutely true. I mean, we're eating so many empty calories, it would be a poor diet for a dog. I do this experimentally. I feed the empty calories on good diets to animals, and they go to pieces. They do it very poorly. So that's why I say we as humans should be eating as much good nutrition as our dogs on good dog foods are getting. And we're not doing it.
You don't really believe it, do you?
I absolutely do. From experimental work, I know that we're not eating as well as dogs who are fed commercial raising.
The difference is that dog owners tend to understand that what the dog eats has to do with the way the dog behaves, with the dog's health, and even with the way his coat shines, and especially if they are thinking about showing the dog and trying to win ribbons with him or to get him to meet certain obedience tests and this and that. They're very, very cautious about the kind of a diet. But, you know, dog food ads always show whether or not Rover or Spot is going to bypass this bowl of kind of funny-looking brown stuff there, or simply stop and begin gobbling it. Now, we don't really do that when we show foods to human beings in some of our media. We tend to advertise its convenience. Everything you hear these nutritionists say seems to be done exactly backwards by most Americans, and certainly in advertising. They show you, on the one hand, for example, one salad oil ad you might think of, where you have all these beautiful ingredients. You got the herbs and the onions and whatnot. And his grandmother used to go to all this drudgery, all this terrible work of chopping this and adding a little of that and cutting this and so on. But now you don't have to do that because we've done it for you. But if you went to the factory and you saw these giant vats, you saw all the boiling things and all the pipes and everything that is being used to process this stuff and then to bottle it or to package it, maybe you would have a different attitude about the way you see some things advertised. So according to Dr. Briggs, our dogs are eating better than we are. Now, actually, that shouldn't surprise very many people because there are 10 times as many nutrition specialists working in the field of animal health as in human health, believe it or not. Knowledge of animal nutrition far surpasses that of human nutrition. The fact is there are 44 essential nutrients the body must have. Animals get all of them in their usual diets because that is the way of animal foods. It seems that people won't buy it unless it's labeled on the can what it's going to do for the dog. What we look at in the labeling on some of our packages isn't what it's going to do for us. It's what it's doing to that food to keep it so it doesn't get a mold on it or something before we eat it. It often says this and that and the other preservative, this and that dye or color or artificial flavoring, what have you. And some of these things have at least been suspected as being carcinogenic in rats. Animals must eat what we, their owners, give them. There's a thought in that, isn't there? We don't eat what is given to us by someone of superior intelligence. Think about it. No, we just eat what looks good, what smells good, or what we remember tastes good, or what somebody else hands to us, not with the idea of, here, this is good for you, so much as mothers might do for little children, but just as a matter of impulse buying of whatever tastes good. You want to ask yourself, if you're feeling fine right now, is there anything at all you are doing which is going to finally catch up with you on this 20-year thing that can come kicking back? If you want continuing articles on the health of your child, of your family, and of your own personal health and well-being, whether physical or mental, then your name needs to be on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. Articles almost every single issue on diet, exercise, drugs, physical health, proper sleep, mental attitudes, the very physical and mental well-being of every individual. The Plain Truth magazine deals with the kind of articles you as a human being need. When you take surveys of anonymous people, you find that their food, their own health, joblessness, hospitalization, insurance costs, rising costs of living, especially in foodstuffs and transportation, and, of course, we all know the energy crunches here. We know that brownouts and blackouts are likely. We know that people are having to slow down and share rides, and some people are hitchhiking, and a lot of people have tried to buy different kinds of automobiles and get more gas mileage as a result of the energy crisis. Well, this kind of an article that shows you shortcuts that you can really use and helps you understand the current trends and conditions in world conditions is exactly what the Plain Truth magazine is all about. There will be up-to-the-moment articles about world news putting you in the picture in the light of Bible prophecy. Also articles, helpful articles on what you can do around the home. Tips about household things, about safety, about fire, about accidents, driving, automobiles, purchasing, the economy, finance, your own personal health problems and the like. The Plain Truth magazine is a family magazine. There will be hard-hitting articles straight from the shoulder about the Bible, doctrinal articles, Christian living articles, and world news before it occurs. Every single Plain Truth magazine, a magazine that seeks to give you understanding.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.